At the time of the death of Solomon, last king of the United Kingdom, the kingdom that he ruled over was an empire, comprising not only Israel, but nations round about Israel, and he controlled the territory from the Euphrates down to the river of Egypt. So it was a powerful empire, a powerful kingdom of about 60,000 square miles. But Solomon had already turned to idolatry before his life was over. And God had made it clear that he was going to divide the kingdom. He was going to take the kingdom, 10 of the tribes, away from David's house. And the others he was going to leave in the family of David in order to keep a lamp alive for David. So when Solomon died, his son Rehoboam took over. Now, I want you to follow me tonight. I know that you won't get all of the names, but watch the flow of the history. That's what we're emphasizing. We're watching the flow of the history. And here we have the death of Solomon. And upon the death of Solomon, his son Rehoboam takes over the throne. But because he does not conduct himself wisely, and because it was the plan of God that the kingdom be taken away, the kingdom did divide, and the other part of the kingdom came under the rule of a man named Jeroboam. Now this Jeroboam was Jeroboam the son of Nebat. And Jeroboam, fearing that his kingdom might be lost to him, decided that the only way he could be sure of keeping his kingdom is by establishing his own religion. And therefore he made golden calves and set one of the calves at the north end of the country at Dan, and another one at Bethel, which was on the border between Israel and Judah. And ever after this, that sin is known as the sin of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat. So these two men began their rule together. And the kingdom, the empire, was vastly downsized almost immediately. The outlying parts of the countries that they had held fell away almost at once. And so this is the way the kingdom looked when it first divided. They were still fairly powerful kingdoms. The kingdom of Israel under Jeroboam controlled this area in the hill country from approximately this boundary at Bethel north, and also over here on the east side of the Jordan River and down into Moab. Judah, on the other hand, controlled the territory south of this border and over into the land of Edom. And so we have the kingdom now beginning with Jeroboam ruling in the north, and that one is called Israel. And the one in the south is called Judah. Now, as we look at the period of the divided kingdom as a whole, and we try to ascertain what was God's point, what was God wanting us to observe during this period of history, I think that the main thing we observe here is that we now have two kingdoms where we had one. And these two kingdoms that we now have share the same history. They share, or at least have shared, the same law. They are from the same family. They have had everything in common. They have had the law, the same law, the same God, the same everything. Now then, when you have a scientific experiment, what you often do is you take one of the lab animals or whatever, and you keep things the same with that animal. You have another one with which you change things and then find out, did that make a difference? And as you observe what makes a difference, then you can say, okay, this is a significant factor here. And I believe that what God wants us to see in the study of the divided kingdom is that He had two examples here side by side in order that we might compare. When the differences came along that did occur, they could not be attributed to a different background, to a different law, to a different God, to different history, to different all of that. Because these two peoples had been one people and they had shared exactly the same background. So whatever makes the difference will have to be something that these kingdoms are involved in doing. And what we will observe is that the northern kingdom of Israel from the beginning went into idolatry. And there was never a king in the northern kingdom that called the people back to renew their covenant with Jehovah. Therefore, the northern kingdom went down very fast in its morals and in its religion. and actually went away into captivity 135 years before the kingdom in the south did so. Now, how do we explain that? The only significant difference between the two kingdoms is that one of them was totally given over to wickedness, the other one was not. There were kings that came along occasionally in Judah who were good kings and called the people back to the Lord. As these kingdoms began, Rehoboam of Judah was faithful unto the Lord at first. For 3 years they served the Lord. And then they stopped serving the Lord, and Rehoboam and the people went off into idolatry. And it was only 2 years later, in the fifth year of Rehoboam, that Shishak, Pharaoh of Egypt, came up with his armies from Egypt and invaded the land of Judah, devastated the land of Judah, and also devastated the land of Israel. He took away many of the very valuable things, the gold shields and things like that, that Solomon had made. And those things were taken away. And both the kingdom of Judah and the kingdom of Israel, both those kingdoms were devastated. Now, as the years went by, Jeroboam continued his reign, but Rehoboam died, and his place was taken by his son, Abijah. Abijah did not rule very long. He was not the best of men, but neither was he the worst of men. And during his reign, there was a battle fought between him and Jeroboam. Jeroboam's forces circled around Abijah. And Abijah was on some kind of an eminence where he could speak to the people. And he spoke to Jeroboam and to his soldiers. And he said, "How do you think you have a chance of overcoming us? Here you are, you're worshiping the idols, and you have forsaken the Lord, and you have come up against us with your armies. You have come up against us, against we who are still serving the Lord. And we're still worshiping Him at the temple in Jerusalem." And Abijah was making a very heart-rending, a very heartfelt speech here. Meanwhile, Jeroboam had his forces circling around to take Abijah and his army by surprise. And when Abijah discovered what was happening, he called on his signal man to blow on the silver trumpets that God had commanded to be made at Mount Sinai, saying that when you blow on this trumpet, I will come to your aid. And when these trumpets were blown, then the forces of Abijah were blessed by God, and they overcame the forces of Jeroboam. When Abijah died, after only about 3 years, his place was taken by Asa. And Asa was a really good king of Judah, especially in the early part of his reign. But not too long after Asa took over, Jeroboam was followed by his son Nadab. Now, God had said, "Jeroboam, if you will serve me and if you will be faithful with this kingdom that I'm giving into your hands, then I will preserve your kingdom and I will set your family upon the throne after you." But Jeroboam did not heed God. He did not follow God's ways. And therefore God said, "Okay, you have given your chance up to have your family established upon the throne." Therefore, Nadab was the last king of the family of Jeroboam to rule upon the throne. He was slain by a man who took his place. His name was Baasha. Now, Baasha had battle with Asa. And as the years had gone by, Asa had been a very good man. On one occasion, God had miraculously delivered Asa and his men from an army led by Zerah the Ethiopian, and that army was numbered in a million men. Myriads and myriads of men came up against Judah, but God gave Asa the victory. Nevertheless, in the days of Baasha, Baasha was going to build a fortress on his border. Asa, hearing about that, hired Ben-Hadad of Syria to come down and attack the north end of Baasha's kingdom. Baasha had to leave his building materials, go up there and meet that threat. And when he did, Asa took his men and went out and stole all the building materials. In war, you don't call it stealing. But he captured, let's use that word, he captured all the building materials that Baasha had stored up, and he took those materials and made two of his own fortresses. Now that might seem to have been a very clever stratagem, except that in doing so, he had not relied upon God. And therefore God sent His prophet to reprove Asa and to say, Asa, did you not remember how God delivered you when Zerah the Ethiopian came into the country? Why is it now that you have turned to such things as this to save yourself? And Asa put him in prison and imprisoned others at that time. And Asa turned his back on God and no longer sought after the Lord. Baasha was likewise given the opportunity to establish his dynasty upon the throne, but he did not do so either. And therefore his son Elah followed him. But Elah did not last but 2 years, and he was slain. And you see, that ended his dynasty. So already we've had two dynasties ruling here in Israel, in the north. But the family of David continues to rule in the south. Following Elah, there was a general by the name of Zimri. But Zimri had not counted his support. And therefore, when he sought to lead this rebellion, the rebellion didn't go anywhere because nobody gathered around him. So Zimri wound up being surrounded at the palace in Tirzah and burning the palace down upon himself and committing suicide in it. And during these tumultuous years, Asa continues his rule in Judah. Now, periodically, I'm going to have to give myself a new surface here. So, let me have just a moment. Now then, Zimri really, in a way, didn't even rule. He had only that week that he ruled up here. And then his life was ended, and there was a new dynasty that began. There was a king by the name of Omri. Now, Omri was a very powerful king. The Bible does not give him much attention, but in the annals of the day and in the history of the day, he was regarded as a very powerful king. Many years later, he is referred to, even his enemies are referred to as being from the house of Omri. So he was a powerful king in his day. Remember that Asa continues his rule in Judah. Though Omri is not known very well, his son was known very well. His name was Ahab. Now, the most significant thing that I believe that we want to notice about Ahab is that he married Jezebel. Jezebel was the daughter of Ethbaal, king of the Sidonians. And the very fact that her father's name was Ethbaal gives us an indication what her religion was. She was a fervent Baal worshiper. And it was an interesting thing that when Asa died, he was followed by his son Jehoshaphat. And Jehoshaphat was one of the better kings of Judah. One of the better kings of Judah. And yet he and Ahab formed a very fast friendship. And I compare the situation here to a healthy body. Here is a healthy body. Judah was a comparatively healthy body at that time. I compare Israel to an unhealthy body. Already the AIDS virus is in Israel. And at this time it is extremely virulent because of the presence of Jezebel and her utter and complete devotion to Baal. And because of the friendship between Ahab and Jehoshaphat, they named their children after each other, and they allowed their children to intermarry. And the daughter of Ahab and Jezebel was named Athaliah, and she married the son of Jehoshaphat. And when that happened, the bad blood of Israel, the total devotion to idolatry and Baal worship, was transferred over as in a transfusion to Judah. So that this was one of the most significant points in the history. It was at this point that the elevator going down for Israel, instead of continually going down, took a jump and just dropped several floors. When Ahab died, he was succeeded by his son Ahaziah. Ahaziah had an accident. He fell through a window, and it turned out to be a mortal wound. He did not survive that, so he did not rule very long. He was then followed by his brother, and this brother's name was Jehoram. Now, Jehoshaphat died, And he was followed by a son named Jehoram. And you can see how, because of the friendship between the family here, there are names shared in the sons. Jehoram was an extremely wicked man. And he died late in the reign of this Jehoram in Israel. And when Jehoram of Judah died, his place was taken by his son, who was named Ahaziah. Now this Ahaziah in Judah was the son of Jehoram of Judah and Athaliah, the daughter of Ahab and Jezebel. So that it was in Jehoram that we see this horrible immorality, meanness, wickedness. We see that come out in him. And we also see it in Ahaziah. But Ahaziah did not have very long to exercise his wickedness. By this time, in the history of the divided kingdom, 80 years have gone by. 80 years of 200 years have gone by. And we are about to reach a very significant point in the history, in the story. This is a very important point in the story, because God looked at this situation and He looked at the wicked house of Omri with Ahab and Ahaziah and Jehoram, and here's Jezebel and their children, and everything they touched was wicked and totally given over to Baal. And God saw that and He said, I'm not going to have that. I am not going to have that. And He also observed the Baal worship and the tainted spirit that had been carried over here into Judah. And therefore, God raised up a man, and that man's name was Jehu. Jehu was commissioned of God to wipe out the house of Ahab. So Jehu was eager to do that. So he rose up as God had commanded and made his way to Jezreel. He destroyed Jezebel. He destroyed the family of Ahab. Ahab, of course, was long since dead by then. He slew Jehoram, the son of Ahab. He slew Ahaziah, who was the grandson of Ahab. He wiped out the 70 sons of Ahab in Samaria. He destroyed the Baal worshippers. Jehu was like a Samson, smiting them hip and thigh. And one might think, oh, this Jehu is really going to be an influence for good. But it turned out that Jehu was doing all of this that the Lord had said for one reason. And that was so that he could be the king. He had no concern about God's will. He had no concern about Baal worship, except that Baal worshipers were Ahab supporters. It didn't matter to him. So when Jehu had destroyed Jehoram of Israel and Ahaziah of Judah and had taken the throne himself, he left the golden calves. He left the golden calves to be worshipped just as they were before. There was nothing changed about that. And meanwhile, over here in Judah, with the death of Ahaziah, his mother, Athaliah, saw, there is nothing standing between me and the throne except a few pathetic grandchildren. And she slew every one of them she could find, but she missed one. She missed an infant that was carried out and preserved by his own aunt. Now, God said, God was giving Jehu the benefit of the doubt at this point. He said, okay, Jehu, now you have done what I ask you to do. And because you have done what I ask you to do, I am going to give you a great blessing. I'm going to give you a great favor. I am going to allow your children to rule upon your throne to the fourth generation. So here we have Jehu now taking over, and his children are going to rule through the fourth generation as a special blessing from God. Over here, Athaliah rules as a usurper until she is killed and that baby has grown up to be 7 years of age, And then Joash is brought out by Jehoiada the priest. And Joash, rightful descendant of David, is seated upon the throne once again. Jehu had a fairly long reign. And Jehu was followed by a son called Jehoahaz. Now we're going to put the number 1 to keep ourselves reminded of the fulfillment of God. Since Jehu himself was not one who cared anything about God, but rapidly made it clear that he was an idolater, God really put the pressure on Jehu. God allowed the enemies of Israel to come in and just devastate them in a very terrible way. At this time, in the country, in the whole Middle East, there was a very, very powerful empire. And this empire was called the Assyrian Empire. It was based upon the upper Tigris and Euphrates rivers, but it now controlled from the Persian Gulf all the way around the Fertile Crescent and even into the land of Egypt. Even in the days of Ahab, there had been a great battle fought between Ahab and others in a coalition against a king called Shalmaneser III. And that battle was fought in 853. And Shalmaneser III was an extremely powerful king of Assyria. Now, as the years go by, the Assyrians are going to be a threat. There's something, there's a squeal or something. Can we turn the sound down, Hardy? Hardy, can we turn the sound down a little? Okay. Now, this Assyrian Empire threatened Israel all along through here, and it was a great storm cloud hovering over the head of the people during this time. Now then, God allowed Jehu and his family to fall into the hands of their enemies. And I want to show you another map. It's not much beyond 80 years into the divided kingdom, and I want you to look at what has happened to the kingdom already. In the days of Jehoahaz, the son of Jehu, the northern kingdom now reaches only from this border between the two countries to here. It is not much bigger than a county. It's about the size of a county. A very small kingdom. Pathetic. He virtually had no army left. He was on his knees, the country on his knees, the country gasping for breath, about to die, and Judah not much better. Because during this same time, Joash himself was turning away from God and not serving God as he should, so that both of the kingdoms were suffering very badly. But Jehoahaz prayed to God. He called upon God to send deliverance. And it was as if God said, okay, I am merciful, and I want to show you what I can do. If you will give yourselves over to me, I will show you what I can do. And so God raised a deliverer. The deliverer is not named specifically, but some think that it might have been Jehoash. It was at least under his reign that the kingdom began to grow back again, and things began to look better. Joash of Judah was succeeded by Amaziah. And Amaziah was a wicked man and did not serve God as he should. On one occasion, he and Joash had a battle together, and Joash thoroughly defeated him. When Joash died, he was succeeded by number 3, Jeroboam. This is another Jeroboam. Jeroboam the second. Now, it was during the time of Jeroboam II, when he began his reign, that Assyria was at a sort of a low ebb. Things were not going too well for Assyria. And therefore, God said to a prophet by the name of Jonah, Jonah, I want you to go and preach to the people of Nineveh and tell them that if they do not repent within 40 days, I will destroy the city. Jonah did not want to do that because he wanted Nineveh destroyed. Nineveh had already done tremendous damage. The Assyrians had already done tremendous damage to his people. So Jonah didn't want to do that. And so you know the story of how Jonah sought to flee from God. But God called him and had him swallowed by a whale or a great sea creature. And then did go ahead and send him to Nineveh to preach to the people there. Now, we want to sort of keep up with the outpouring of prophets that God is sending during these times. So, here's Jonah. And as the years of Jeroboam's reign went on by, there were other prophets who showed up. There was Amos. There was Hosea. These were prophets that God sent. Jonah early in the reign of Jeroboam. Amos and Hosea about a little over halfway through the time of Jeroboam the second. And these men came, and of course Jonah went to Nineveh. But Amos and Hosea preached to the people of their own country. Amos went to Israel, and Hosea also preached Israel. And they really reproved them. And Hosea tried to show them that this is how God feels. He had Hosea to go through an experience where Hosea's wife was unfaithful to him. And so God said, "Now Hosea, that is the way I feel that now that my people have turned away from me." And so these were prophets that God sent. Now, Amaziah died, and there was a gap of some years that went by, and then there was another king who came to rule upon the throne of David, and that was Uzziah. In the year that Uzziah died, the prophet Isaiah received his commission from God. Now, Isaiah preached both regarding Israel in the north and Judah in the south. And what God wanted to say through Isaiah was, "I want you to tell these people what they have done. I want you to show them the consequences of what they've done. I want you to show them the deliverance in the future that I will yet bring," and so on. In this commission, God said to Isaiah, this is Isaiah chapter 6. God said, "Isaiah," well, the way it started out, Isaiah was just suddenly, he was in the throne room of heaven itself. And as he was observing the Lord sitting upon His throne and His glory filled the whole temple, he said, "Oh, woe is me, I am undone." Because there he was in the presence of God. And God said, "Well, yes, you are a man of unclean lips, but I can do something about that." So he had one of the cherubs take a coal, and he went down and touched it to the lips of Isaiah, purging him of his uncleanness of his lips, purging him of his sin. And now Isaiah, cleansed, stood there in the presence of God. And God said, "Who will go and do this job for us?" Isaiah said, "Here am I, send me. What's the job?" And God said, "I want you to go and preach to this people. And make them shut their eyes. Make them close their ears. Make them not listen. By telling them what God wanted them to do, though God knew they would reject it and would not hear it." Isaiah understood what he was to do. He said, "How long, O Lord?" And the Lord said, "You do it until the land is devastated, until the cities lie waste, and until they are empty." And that was the job Isaiah was given. And so Isaiah began that work and continued that work through the reigns of Uzziah, Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah. Many years he prophesied and worked in Israel. So, we have Isaiah coming along over here, just following on the heels of Hosea, and then following on the heels of Isaiah, we have the prophet Micah. And oh, what the Lord was telling men during those days. The Lord was saying in Isaiah chapter 2 that the mountain of the Lord's house shall be established up above the mountains and on top of the mountains, and all nations shall flow unto it. And that the word of the Lord would go forth from Jerusalem. The same prophet, Isaiah. Isaiah 7:14 says, "Therefore the Lord Himself will give you a sign. Behold, the virgin shall conceive, and shall bring forth a son, and shall call His name Emmanuel." Isaiah prophesied over 700 years before Jesus came to the earth. During this day, the Assyrians had risen to power again, and their empire was moving again. And there was a king that came upon the throne called Tiglath-Pileser III. And he was the very epitome of an Assyrian king. Energetic, powerful, decisive, intelligent, and ruthless. He brought his army down into the northern part. He brought his army down into the northern part of Israel. And he took cities and took captives and devastated cities all in this northern part here. That very part which in New Testament days would be known as Galilee. The word is used even back here in the days of the Old Testament, the word Galilee. Isaiah wrote these words at the very time when Tiglath-Pileser III had come down into the country with his army and had devastated the cities of the north, Asher, Zebulun, Naphtali, Issachar. And Isaiah wrote, "There shall be no gloom to her that was in anguish. In the former times he brought into contempt the land of Zebulun and the land of Naphtali. But in the latter time hath he made it glorious by the way of the sea, beyond the Jordan, Galilee of the Gentiles. The people that sit in darkness have seen a great light. And the people that sit in the shadow of death, upon them the light hath shined." Isaiah prophesied those very words, which were fulfilled by the coming of Jesus Christ and His preaching in Galilee. It was in Galilee that the light shined, and that prophecy was fulfilled. In that same chapter of Isaiah, that was Isaiah 9, 1 and 2, in Isaiah 9, 6 and 7, Isaiah says, "Unto us a child is born. Unto us a son is given. And the government will be upon his shoulders. And his name shall be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. Of his government and of peace there shall be no end, upon the throne of David and upon his kingdom, to establish it and to uphold it with justice, now and forever. The zeal of the Lord of hosts will perform this." God was preaching to His people through these prophets. He was preaching to them, telling them what He desired of them. "This is what I want in our relationship." And also telling them about that same one that we read of in Genesis 3:15. The same one that we have read of in the promise to Abraham that his seed, through his seed, all nations of the earth would be blessed. Isaiah was telling of that same one. And he told of that same one in chapter 53 when he told of one who would die for our transgression, with whose stripes we are healed. He told of that one, the Christ, the Messiah. His contemporary Micah said, "Though thou art little to be numbered among the thousands of Judah," or he said like this, let me start out again, "Bethlehem, Bethlehem Ephrathah, though thou art little to be numbered among the thousands of Judah, nevertheless out of thee shall one come forth to me," God says, "who will be ruler in Israel, whose goings forth are from of old, from everlasting." Micah made that statement. And so God just sent a whole group of prophets here. You see that? There was a whole group of prophets that occurred here during the days of Jeroboam, and especially during the days of Uzziah, Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah. Four kings that ruled here. And during the days of these kings, these prophets prophesied. Jonah came before them, but the others came during the days of these kings that ruled in Judah. The time was drawing to a close. with the death of Jeroboam II. It was not more than about 3 decades until the fall of Israel. Only 3 decades left. The nation of Israel was in a canoe, moving down the swiftly flowing water of time, headed to the falls over which they would go and be completely destroyed. Jeroboam was followed by his son Zechariah. Now then, you will observe that Zechariah is the fourth of Jehu's descendants. And God said, your descendants through the fourth generation will rule. When Zechariah had ruled for 6 months, God said, okay, I have fulfilled my promise to Jehu. And so Zechariah was killed after 6 months. The time was approaching when Israel would be carried away, destroyed, carried away into captivity. Zechariah was slain by Shalom. Shalom only ruled for 3 months when he himself was assassinated. It would have been a horrible time in which to live. Shalom was assassinated by Menachem. And Menachem took over the kingdom and ruled. He was then followed by Pekahiah. Pekahiah only ruled a couple of years, and he was followed by Pekah. During these same years, Uzziah ruled. Uzziah ruled in Judah. But then Uzziah died, and he was followed by his son Jotham. And then Jotham was followed by his son Ahaz. In fact, it was in the days when Ahaz was scared to death of Pekah, the king of Israel, that the prophecy of the virgin birth in Isaiah 7:14 occurred. And God was wanting Ahaz to learn. And Isaiah was his tool to help Ahaz to learn. Listen, Ahaz, you better not be afraid of reason. And Pekah, you better be afraid of me. But Ahaz was not afraid of God. He did not fear God. The last king of Israel was Hoshea. And his reign was not illustrious. The king of Judah who ruled at the time when Israel was carried away was Hezekiah. And he was one of the best kings of Judah. Hezekiah sought to call the people back to God. He gathered them together, apparently after the destruction of the northern kingdom. He even gathered people together from the north to come down and participate in a Passover, the likes of which had not been done even since the days of Solomon. But it was the end for the northern kingdom. The date was 721 B.C. It was almost exactly 200 years since that kingdom had divided. And now Israel is taken away. And this is what was left. Here north of the border of Judah, there was no Israel anymore. The Assyrian Empire ruled clear down to the border of Judah. And even Judah was in grave danger from the Assyrians. The Assyrians besieged Samaria. Shalmaneser V, powerful Assyrian king, laid siege to the city of Samaria. But he died during the process of the siege. Sargon II, who followed him, completed the siege and took the city and took the Israelites away into captivity. The Assyrians were very powerful. A similarly powerful army came down again. Not many years later, Hezekiah still ruling upon the throne in Judah. And they came down just bulldozing everything standing in their way. Coming down the coast over here, just steamrolling everything that stood before them. And the king of Assyria was Sennacherib. And he sent an insulting message to Hezekiah and an insulting message to Jehovah. And he said, don't listen to them. Don't trust your God. The gods of the other nations have not been able to save them. Your God will not be able to save you either. And God said to Hezekiah, Hezekiah, don't worry about this. I am going to put my hook in the nose of Sennacherib. And I am going to turn him back. And I will take him back home by the way which he came. And the Lord went out and that night destroyed 185,000 of the influential men of Sennacherib's army, just completely pulling the nerves and the network out of his army. And Sennacherib pulled up stakes and he went back home. That same Assyrian army that had come down and taken Samaria couldn't even get close enough to Jerusalem to fire an arrow at it. Do you see that? The same mighty army couldn't get close enough to Jerusalem to shoot an arrow at it. What's the difference? The difference was God. That's the difference. You know what? In a way, you can sum up the message of the Bible from one standpoint. You can do it from many standpoints, but one of the things we can say is the lesson of the Bible is God makes the difference. And did you know that's true in your family? It is true in the church. It is true in everything. God makes the difference. And in the final analysis, I'll tell you something else. Only God makes the difference. And here in Samaria and Jerusalem, the only thing that made the difference was God. And the fact that Judah sought Him and sought that relationship with Him. 200 years, the divided kingdom, from about 922 to 721. During that time, the dynasty changes 9 times. I didn't even continue to count all of the, or to mark where all the dynasty changed. It changed after Zechariah. It changed after Shalom. It changed after Pekahiah. It changed after Pekah. 9 times. Tonight, what about your own relationship to God? Realize that He's the only one that will make the difference in your life. If you're not a child of God tonight, submit your life to God and become His child by meeting the conditions of salvation that He has set forth. If you're willing to do this and become a Christian tonight, we invite you to come as we stand and sing.